Hello, dear friends. Just like that, we are one episode away from being a quarter of the way to 100. Yes, indeed. Welcome back, and thank you for joining me for this, the 24th episode of the Age Unsquared podcast, as we continue the journey from deep within the prairie land of Canada. Thank you so much for returning for yet another dose of a new life. And if this is your very first Unsquared Rodeo, I'm really thrilled to have you here on this journey of inspiration, education, and illumination. My main concentration of discussion is on topics of personal finance, investments, and yes, even boring old economics as the adventure continues towards financial independence. With that said, though, at the end of the day, it's all about building a bigger, better, and more fulfilling life, because if you ain't happy, no amount of financial prowess will matter. I look forward to welcoming you back regularly, so I trust you'll find value in what we discuss here today. Of course, time is a ticking, and if I had a studio producer, I'm sure he or she would be tapping their watch right about now, trying to get me to dive right into the financial weeds. So, here we go! But first, a quick little anecdote with some interesting yet sobering facts. One of my current side hustles to top up the family coffers is to work for charities and advise them during their casino events. Now, how it all works here in my neck of the woods isn't really relevant for this discussion. The point being that this week, I found myself at a casino for 2 days. And as fate would have it, I also came across an article on Zero Hedge titled 40 Facts That Prove That America's Moral Collapse Is Spinning Wildly Out of Control. Now, before anyone gets stuck up on thinking that I'm judging those at the casino by associating casino with moral decay, that's not really the point here. I'm as much a fallible person as anyone else. Not only that, yes, I have played a few dollars at a casino over my lifetime so far. But when I say a few dollars, I mean a few dollars. I don't recall ever losing more than 20 bucks on any given casino outing. And when I say outing, I mean once a year. And that's being generous too. To me, it's a quick form of entertainment with a longer lasting feeling of pain associated with losing that small bit of money. And then thanking the powers that be that I'm not a hardcore, day in and day out gambler. To me, any activity that may be deemed morally objectionable yet is engaged by many people on a regular basis, whether that's gambling or drug use or alcohol abuse, it all stems from a larger void somewhere else in their life. Now, I'm no psychologist, so this is just my own personal opinion on a matter I observe and read about from time to time. This, I feel, is relevant to one of the points regularly brought up on this podcast, namely living a fulfilling and meaningful life. So when I see surveys revealing stats about increased moral decay, it makes me think there is increased unhappiness and growing gaps in feeling fulfillment. In the article itself from Zero Hedge, it states that this recent survey by Pew Research Center found an astounding 77% of Americans are either very worried or fairly worried about America's moral health. It then proceeds to list 40 facts that illustrate America's decay. And yes, I get this podcast is broadcast from the perceived morally superior Canada, but I think it's still relevant to highlight some of the facts listed in the article. So here we go. So one of the facts says that America has killed more than 60 million children since Roe versus Wade was decided in 1973. Now this is the case that opened the doors to abortion in America. The article then continues in saying that Americans are now more likely to die from an opioid overdose than they are from a car accident. And then in the city of Baltimore, approximately 1 out of 4 babies is born as an opioid addict. Overdosing on drugs has now become the leading cause of death for Americans under the age of 50. Now get this, McDonald's feeds approximately 70 million people a day globally. And then there's apparently a site called Pornhub, which gets more than 78 million visits a day. That takes us to the next fact, which says the number of married couples with children in the U.S. just reached a 56-year low. According to the United Nations Population Fund, 40% of all births in the U.S. now happen outside of marriage. But if you go back to 1970, which is less than 50 years ago, that figure was sitting at just 10%. And then there's the fact that by the time an American child reaches the age of 18, that child will have seen approximately 40,000 murders on television. Proceeding further, according to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, doctors in the United States write more than 250 million prescriptions for antidepressants each year. That's closing in on actually one prescription per American, if you can believe it, because I think the population of America is around 330 million. Again, that's 250 million prescriptions of antidepressants each year. Then there's also the recent study which found that the average American spends 86 hours a month on a cell phone. And then we look and see that another study found that one third of all American teenagers have not read a single book in the past year. And then here's a fact that plays right into the financial discussions we have here. Americans are obsessed with material things and are willing to go deep into debt to get what they want. At this point, 480 million credit cards are in circulation in the United States. That number has risen by nearly 13% since 2015 alone. And right now, 37 million credit card accounts in the United States are seriously delinquent. Then moving on to another fact here, according to the Pentagon, and get this, 71% of young adults are ineligible to serve in the U.S. military. Why? Because they're either too dumb, too fat, or have a criminal background. How much longer do you think that the U.S. empire is going to last overseas with those kind of numbers? And then this is just astounding here. During one 7-day stretch last summer, so that's during 1 week stretch, a total of 16,000 official complaints were submitted to the city of San Francisco. About what, you ask? About piles of human feces littering the streets. And then we look and see that the suicide rate in the United States is up 34% since the year 2000 and is now the second leading cause of death for Americans aged 15 to 24. And to top this section off, an average of more than 100 churches are dying in the United States every single week. The number of Americans with no religion has increased by 266% over the last 3 decades. Now, these are definitely facts that are very sobering and reminds us that there are forces at work against us living a fulfilling and meaningful life. So our battle here is much greater than we think it is. And now, with all of that cheeriness setting the foundation, back to your regularly scheduled Unsquared podcast programming with taxes. Yes, my friends, it's that time of year here in the True North Strong and Free. It's tax time. The only way you don't know that is if you either live under a rock or have somehow gotten away with a Robin Hood maneuver type of lifestyle. And what do I mean by that? Only I shall know. But all you need to know is that I don't pull such maneuvers. Anyways, given the time of year, a few years back, I decided to post a question about income tax on my weekly Question of the Ages poll on Twitter. Specifically, I asked, as an employee, how do you prefer your income tax be handled? And then I gave the following options to choose from. A, lump sum year-end payment, or B, regular payroll deduction, or C, I hate income tax. In case you missed the results of that poll, option C, I hate income tax, won out at 57%. That aside, of course, the runner-up was option A, lump sum year-end payment. Frankly, I found this quite surprising. Based on my financial conversation over the years with people in the financial industry and clients, people seemed more agreeable to having the tax just disappear from their paycheck before they get that net amount deposited to their bank account. Besides, a lot of people think, what I don't see can't hurt me, right? And speaking of hurt, think about it. Writing a check for tens of thousands of dollars once a year, or maybe even hundreds of thousands depending on what your income was, would not be easy for most people. How do I know this? because the majority of people have a hard time saving any money at all. So how would it be easier to save that tax money that's owing in April and then paying out that lump sum all in one shot? Now, with that said though, ideally, and of those first two choices, I think lump sum year-end payment makes more logical sense. When you're paying in regular withheld installments, as is what happens with most employees in this day and age, the amount being withheld is based on a guess of how much money the government thinks you'll be owing at the end of the year. In a lot of cases, they take too much tax from you, and that is why you get a refund in April. But few people stop to think that the government has basically borrowed that money they refund to you with absolutely zero interest paid to you at the refund. How does that make any sense for your finances? Instead, the logical choice would be to get all of your money paid to you every paycheck and then having you set aside and invest a portion of it until such time that it is owed at tax time. But of course, we are mere peons who can't be trusted to do things on our own and need the government to do everything for us, including withholding taxes. It's yet another example of how we give up more responsibility for ourselves in the guise of financial security. It truly is the nanny state taking care of everything, even our pocketbooks. But we cannot reach our own financial independence when we rely on others to do everything for us. I'm of the thinking that we should have a choice when dealing with income taxes. As those who are already self-employed or entrepreneurs, an employee should be able to relay to the government through their employer that they do not want income tax withheld from their paycheck, and that they, as a person of free will and ability, will take sole responsibility to pay the necessary tax at tax time. If there are those who still prefer the withholding system, well, so be it. But if others, who may be more financially savvy, wish to be responsible for their own tax liability, should they not have that option? Besides, we live in a society where we are told that we're lucky to have so many options in life. Why can't this be one of them? Speaking of tax options, I read this week that one couple in Manitoba has been holding back 10% of their taxes owing for the past few years. They've even sent a letter to the Canada Revenue Agency, or CRA, explaining why. And why are they doing this? Well, Canada spends about 10% of its federal budget on the military. So this couple, due to their religious beliefs, does not support violence and thus finds giving money for military expenditures objectionable. Good on them, I say. But there's a precedent that we will need to be watching here because, frankly, if they can withhold tax due to a certain moral objection about military, why can't anyone else do so on other objections they have? As an example, what if someone objects to how money is spent on healthcare? What if that person thinks they can find better healthcare on their own and thus withholds tax money owing? Is their reasoning objectionable? Maybe, maybe not. But it's another potential curveball into the tax web. As with many things discussed here on this podcast, I'm providing this discussion as something for you to mentally chew on instead of just taking things as they are. Unplug from the matrix and start considering alternative perspectives. We all walk around so proud to be living in a society that allows us to be individuals, and yet a lot of us just follow the herd on so many things. On the topic of income tax, consider these insights and turn a bit against the herd. Be an individual, not a sheep. But let's end this taxing topic before it melts our brains. To round out the conversation today, I want to highlight an interesting section of an email I recently read. It's an email I subscribe to, dealing with speculative investments. Like my own email newsletter, it's weekly and free. I'm not one to recommend investment or financial services willy-nilly to others, but if you're looking for a good free one with general insights into the mining and commodity space, take a look at Lewis James at The Independent Speculator. Yes, he has a paid subscription service there as well, which I am not a part of, nor can I yet endorse, based on my lack of experience with it. But his free weekly email really is a gem in the rough when looking for some alternative views on speculative mining and commodities. For those of you that aren't sure what I mean by speculative investing, I think that fact alone of not knowing what it is should probably indicate to you that you don't need to do it and you probably don't want to do it. Some would call speculative investing gambling. In a way, it is. But if you know what you're doing and what to expect, and realize that at the end, you're in the game to help small companies succeed by providing them money to grow their business, you can make some good money that way. But if you don't have money you're able to lose while continuing to sleep at night, then my suggestion would be to keep your distance. Now, that's not to say you can't read anything about speculative investing. Just know that this is an area where your risk meter jumps right through the roof. Now, why I'm bringing up this email in this segment is because in his latest email, Lewis James, which happens to be his pen name by the way, wrote a very interesting point about investment and financial marketing. First he writes, and I'm quoting him here, "If I were like so many other financial writers, I would make some grand prediction every week. The idea would be to make readers feel an urgent need to subscribe immediately." Now, when he says subscribe, he means to his paid service, which, from my understanding, is a newsletter where he dives deeper in much more specific details about his investment ideas and suggestions. He continues with, "The problem with this, of course, is that an actual deadline for a spectacular investment opportunity does not come along every week, nor every month, nor even, depending on how high your standards are, every year. So, people make stuff up." Now, when I read those few sentences, I had to go through them a few times because they really struck a chord with me. So many times in the financial media, we see pundits blurting and screaming out investment ideas, many times with very little comprehensible reasoning supporting their claims. And it's very easy for many of us Main Streeters, in our quest for riches, to get sucked into this mania of investment ideas. But how often do you go back and hold these media personalities accountable for their ideas? Now, I'm not proposing you sue them. They rightfully remind you at the end of their show or correspondence that their ideas are general in nature and that no one should be making investment decisions based solely on what was heard or read. It's best to work with a financial advisor who knows your particular investment and financial profile, we're reminded. Frankly, after being lambasted with all that treasure full of investment nuggets, very few people heed that warning at the end. Again, many of us get sucked into that mania. Now, when I say hold them accountable, I mean remembering that their record for financial and investment suggestions is questionable at best and that they should not be followed blindly. Remember, if they were truly rolling in riches, I highly doubt that they would be on TV or writing about it all the time. They'd be busy making more money. And with so much going on in our own lives, very few of us even remember so shortly afterwards, because we're right back to being mesmerized by the pundit's magical words about riches. But when along comes someone who does not provide regular and loud recommendations and predictions, we think that person is an amateur who's merely unsure what to say. I get it completely, because I know there are those out there who think I'm not strong enough to make bold predictions. Instead, you miss the point that I don't want to be like most other investment and financial gurus, leading you astray with my generalities. Yes, I provide free general insights, meant to help you think through your financial and investment positions. To paraphrase Morpheus from the Matrix movie, I'm trying to free your financial mind. Towards the end of his email, Lewis James states much of the same sentiment when he writes, "I hope you understand that if I don't make some big, bold prediction, it's not because I lack courage or insight. It's because my goal is to give you the clearest guidance I can. I don't want to scare you into subscribing based on fear of missing out. I don't want to lure you into subscribing because I hold the key to instant riches in the palm of my hand. I want to be genuinely useful to you, to earn your respect and business for the long term." I, Age, could not have said that any better. It's why I sincerely refer to our extended financial family. I am building a financial community that treats everyone like family, to one extent or another. If you're happy simply by following my free content for some general ideas and insights, I sincerely love that. I'm glad that I'm providing some value to you. If you want to join our inner circle of old-style kitchen table discussions about your finances, I always look forward to meeting you there too. But what we have here is something based on usefulness and respect for the long term. Not some short-term ideas yelled at you through the TV or computer, just to make myself look smarter than I am. Frankly, that's fake financial and investment news. I'm not here to fake it until I make it. If you're looking for fake, there are a vast number of personalities out there for you. I am not that person. But be weary of who, how and why you take investment and financial recommendations. Don't let the loud marketing easily sway and distract you. Now, speaking of being distracted, my imaginary studio producer is back, tapping that watch to remind me it's now time to wrap up and put a pretty bow on top of this digital gift. And if you think what I provide here really is a gift that would really benefit others, well, I have some friendly asks of you to help me get the financial word out. First and foremost, we all know family and friends that are absolutely tired of getting the runaround with financial insights. So it's time to share this podcast with them. Yep, send them a quick email or forward my post on social media to them. Even send them a pigeon, whatever it takes. Secondly, I'm sure that they'll ask you if you are subscribed. Your answer, I hope, will be yes. If not, well, my friends, now is the time to head on over to www.ageonsquare.com and pick your preferred podcast platform. Guess what? It's free to do. Lastly, but certainly not leastly, once you're on that podcast platform, be kind, remind others of how you feel about Age Unsquared by leaving a rating and comment. And if you're looking to engage with me directly, head on over to my virtual water cooler on Twitter. I'm at the original age. And instead, if a cup of Java or chai is more your thing, let's connect over one at your kitchen table and discuss your financially independent future. I absolutely love hearing your stories and what makes you who you are. If there's a connection and reason, I would love to welcome you into our extended financial family. Until such time, I'm available for comments or questions through Twitter, or you can drop me a line at adrian@agecorp.co. As you wait for the quarter century episode, mes amis, stay safe, keep your integrity, and see you at the pinnacle.